In the 1882 version of professional baseball, Chris Vanderay saw an opportunity to sell beer. It was a good thing for baseball that he did, since at least according to Edward Acorn, the author of a new book titled The Summer of Beer and Whiskey, otherwise baseball might not have flourished as it did. Edward Acorn joins me now from WGUC in Cincinnati. Welcome back to Only a Game.
Thank you, Bill.
Tell us a little bit about the world of professional baseball as Chris Vanderay entered it in the 1880s, and why some feared that the game at that time might not endure.
Yeah, the game was really on the ropes in the early 1880s. It had been all but destroyed by gambling corruption, and also sort of a rowdy quality at the ballparks, and people just didn't like to go out and see the game anymore. Some people in Philadelphia, for instance, tried to revive the game and went around to the local sports editors. They said, "Don't talk to us about that old crow." They thought it was fading out and was ready to die. Vanderay was a grocer and saloon keeper. He was a German immigrant who had come over in the 1860s with nothing. He invested his life savings in baseball, and he made a fortune.
But basically, originally, saw baseball as an opportunity to collect a lot of thirsty people together and sell them beer, right?
That's right. His perspective on this whole thing was he saw baseball as a sort of an inducement to drink beer, sort of like pretzels. I should explain, there was one major league at the time, the National League. It was trying to clean up baseball's reputation. So it charged a high admission price, 50 cents, which doesn't sound like much now, but was a lot then. Refused to have any Sunday baseball games, and it barred beer at the ballpark. Now, along came Vanderay, who did the exact opposite. He sold beer at the park, he had Sunday baseball, and he charged only 25 cents. All that permitted people, working people and immigrants who were, you know, toiling 6 days a week in these factories and so forth, to come out on Sunday and with their families and enjoy baseball and drink a beer. And that dramatically increased the reach of the game and its popularity.
You write that for all his enthusiasm, Mr. Vanderay, quote, never quite seemed to grasp the intricacies of baseball. How did you come to that conclusion?
Well, he was an interesting character. He's an amazingly shrewd businessman, and he put together the structure of these teams that won four straight pennants and in a World Series, which was a quite remarkable achievement. But he also didn't seem to quite get what baseball was about. He once had a sports writer, and he was showing him his park, and he bragged that he had the biggest infield in baseball. He meant the actual field, you know, and the reporter had to explain, no, they're all the same size. And he also would go into the clubhouse after a game and start screaming at the players, "Why did you drop that ball?" As if they did it on purpose or something.
As if they could explain. In February of 1883, there came to be a truce called the National Agreement, whereby the two competing leagues in existence at that time built what you have termed the framework for organized baseball down to this day. But wait, Chris Vanderay opposed that agreement. How does he get credit for saving baseball?
Well, he was the last holdout. He actually wanted to drive the National League into the ground, and he might have succeeded, but the two leagues came together and made peace. And essentially that meant that the new league that Vanderay helped create, the American Association, respected the reserve clause, which goes way back in baseball. That's the clause whereby you stay with your team and you can't just jump to another team at the end of the season. So he reluctantly accepted that, but he thought he could easily outbid these other owners and get all the best players in baseball.
At this point, we should perhaps acknowledge that Mr. Vanderay's efforts to sell beer and save baseball might not have been as successful if the summer of 1883 hadn't also offered fans a terrific pennant race, right?
Oh, I love this season. It was this great pennant race between four American Association teams. This is one of the reasons I love early baseball, is you can pull out these incredible stories that nobody's ever heard.
Humility was not among Chris Vanderay's virtues. He eventually built a statue of himself that stood outside Sportsman's Park in St. Louis for a time. Was he afraid that if he didn't build it himself, nobody else would?
Possibly. I mean, that might be part of it, but his whole career, he just was this figure who loved to be the center of attention. you know, had the statue commissioned and put it outside the ballpark. And then when he lost everything late in his life, he went bankrupt. He moved it to his gravesite, and it still stands there over his grave in St. Louis.
There's a particularly effective moment, I think, in the book where you describe Mr. Vandereay coming out to see a parade related to the ball team that he once owned.
Yes, he comes out, and some people recognize him, and he starts crying, and he's so embarrassed he goes back inside the building. And that was just a sad ending for a man who had done so much to bring baseball to life in St. Louis.
Now, you indicated in the Summer of Beer and Whiskey that you think Mr. Vandereay should be in the Hall of Fame. Make your case.
Well, I mean, he founded the St. Louis Cardinals. He helped found this new major league. He made baseball fun and exciting again. He really encouraged the marriage of beer and baseball, which I think is a marriage made in heaven. His teams were extremely successful, 4 straight pennants. I think this goes back to in the early days of the Hall of Fame, there was a prejudice against the American Association. It was sort of stuffed with National League, American League types, and they didn't view this rowdy league with much esteem. So I think he should be in the Hall, and I'm hoping this will wake up some people to just how big a contribution he made.
Edward Acorn is the author of The Summer of Beer and Whiskey, How Brewers, Barkeeps, Rowdies, Immigrants, and a Wild Pennant Fight Made Baseball America's Game. And the book is published by Public Affairs. The author joined me from WGUC in Cincinnati. Mr. Acorn, thank you very much for speaking with me.
Thank you, Bill. It was lots of fun.
Only a Game is produced by Karen Given and Doug Trabu. Our technical director is John Perotti. Our intern is Martin Kessler. We had help this week from Don Danko at WGUC in Cincinnati and from Paul Vitkus. Our senior producer is Gary Wallach. Our final word comes from LA Times hockey writer Helene Elliott.
Oh, gosh. You know, you always ask the tough questions, don't you?
You're darn right, Helene, and I expect to get the tough answers that I'm looking for. This is hockey. This is serious. I'm Bill Littlefield. Thank you for listening. See you next week.
Support comes from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live healthy, productive lives at gatesfoundation.org. The SCAN Foundation, committed to aging with dignity and independence at thescanfoundation.org. And the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to a vigorous presence for poetry in American culture. PoetryFoundation.org. This is NPR.